This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, eager.
Having a hard time finding your favorite show on shortwave or satellite? The Christian Media Newspaper now provides program guides to all the top Christian, patriot, and alternative radio programs. 4 times a year, they print an updated shortwave and satellite program guide. Christian Media is $20 per year and includes news and interviews on Christian books, video, music, and broadcasting. Subscribe now and receive a free Christian music compact disc with your paid order. To subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. Once again, to subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Call now.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
Listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, baby. That was wonderful.
You're welcome.
Hey, how you been the last few days, anyway?
Okay.
Okay, what have you been doing?
Well, I've been playing on my computer and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been playing with Allison.
Uh-huh.
And I've been drawing.
Okay. You've been helping me with a lot of work in the yard.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for helping me open this broadcast today.
You're welcome.
Okay. We'll see you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, baby. Folks, we have a guest in studio today, and I think we're going to have some fun. We're going to talk to our guest, and we're going to talk to you, because we'll be taking your calls after a little preliminary chit-chat, whatever that means.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. I figured that you're the Muriel, the God-looking kind. So let me get right to the point. You're right in style when you're in Muriel's company.
Well, thank you, Muriel, for the introduction. Our guest. Folks, today in studio we have Vince DeNiro, who's a longtime friend of mine, politician extraordinaire, ex leader of the Constitution Party, patriot, guru of liberty and freedom, and police officer, sheriff's deputy, real estate mogul. Is that about covered, Ben?
Well, that's about exaggerating it a bit.
Well, I thought we'd have some fun today. So what part of all that is true?
Dub out the last about 2 minutes. deputy sheriff part's true, and have been active politically for many years. I have been credited with beating the first city ordinance assault weapon ban in the country back in 1989.
Put him in the hospital, I got to tell you.
What's that?
When you beat him?
Oh, beat him real bad, real bad.
I also forgot.
Oh,
it's Chef Extraordinaire.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Maybe working on a cookbook. We're going to have to see. I'm not cooking tonight, though. You're taking me out, right?
That's right.
Oh, that's good.
Taking you out.
That's good. I wore myself out last night.
Taking you to the hottest restaurant in town.
Literally.
Literally.
Well, let's see. A little bit more about myself, since I am the guest, so I guess I'll let them know who I am.
Oh, you're falling right into my trap.
I know.
Just start talking and don't stop. And
I'm setting myself up for a fall or something.
I get the rest.
I used to be a gun dealer. I was a Class 3 machine gun dealer, also a Class 2 manufacturer back in the late 80s, and that's how I got involved with beating the assault weapon ban legislation. That was in Youngstown, Ohio. After Patrick Purdy did his awful thing in Stockton, it, of course, went across the country with city councils. The different city council members wanted to save the day in their city and pass assault weapon ban legislation that was going to bar any criminal from ever using an assault weapon in a crime. So it went from L.A. to Cleveland, Ohio, and then 60 miles south down to Youngstown, because Youngstown, being an old steel mill town and pretty much lost its industry, the newer politicians tried to emulate Pittsburgh, and which is 60 miles east of Youngstown. They tried to pick up everything that the bigger cities are doing and somehow maybe make them successful in Youngstown. And one of the things they thought was going to be successful was an assault weapon ban, and I helped beat it without the help of the NRA, which really didn't do too much.
Well, they don't do too much at all anymore, do they?
No, they didn't. When I started posting information across the community, mostly at General Motors, there's a copper weld steel, which is a big industry in Youngstown. I put out about 2 cases of paper, which is the equivalent to about 10,000 flyers that I put out. It cost a tremendous amount of money. From what I saw that the NRA sent out was about 60 flyers to local people that have been activists. Now, we did have help, of course. At that time, I was an NRA member, and we did have help from their local rep and from the local membership, but as far as the Washington, D.C. organization doing anything, they really did nothing. And that was the time we had Wimpy Cassidy was the president of the NRA at that time, which he isn't much worse than, I feel like, Wayne LaPierre.
The only good thing Wayne LaPierre did was put that ad in the newspaper calling the ATF jackbooted, Nazi jackbooted thugs or something like that.
Which you have proudly displayed framed in your office.
That's correct. That was sent as a gift by some other friends of mine who knew that I would appreciate it and frame it and hang it in my office. They framed it. They sent it to me framed.
Oh, they did?
They knew I would display that prominently upon my wall and proudly.
Proudly. Yeah, the NRA has backpedaled for a long time. But anyway, during this time that I was doing all the gun stuff, and I became involved in other legislation and helping to beat it and trying to get Ohio a concealed weapons permit system, which I'm still active in doing that. I had been involved with martial arts. I've been involved in martial arts for about 14 years or so.
That's the store all the way in the back of the corner of the mall.
What's that?
Martial arts.
Yeah, that's it. But I've been involved in karate for a while, and during the time I was involved with karate, I developed and invented what has been said to me, and it really is, it's the most advanced stretching device to stretch the lower limbs, rotate the hip joints, and stretch the lower back. And I did design it, and in 1992, I was inducted in the Martial Arts Hall of Fame for that. Also inducted that night, which was a big deal to me, was Wally J., who is one of the probably the biggest well-known name in jiu-jitsu in the world. So that was a big deal. But where I'm going with this is I tried to have the machine manufactured in the United States for many years, and we had many thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of orders. It's endorsed by everybody that's anybody in karate. If anyone out there is familiar with karate, I'm sure you're familiar with the magazines. I've appeared many times in Inside Kung Fu magazine, Karate International, that's put out by Michael DePasquale, Jr. and Sr., Sr. is probably the father of American Jiu-Jitsu, and they're really good friends of mine. So it's endorsed by everybody, but trying to get this thing manufactured is another story, because over the years there's been a lot of NAFTA and GATT-type legislation which has hindered and shut down machine shops. I've witnessed it in the past 10 years, what has happened. And NAFTA and GATT pretty much put the last nails in the coffin as far as trying to manufacture anything here in the U.S. It's extremely tough. Some people said to me, well, there's Soloflex is entirely made in the United States. What people don't realize is my device, well, it's a lot more complicated than Soloflex, and Soloflex is a very simplistic device that sells at an extremely high price for what it is. It is made in the U.S., but what sells Soloflex is marketing, basically. It isn't what it's made. Its patent is really holding it together, because as soon as that patent would ever die out in the United States, China would make that Soloflex for about, probably $150, and they go for about, $1,400 now, $1,300, something like that. Yeah, so I've been involved. All this stuff has kind of got me riled up to snoop and see what the government's doing, I guess.
Please make sure you have enough, 'cause a worn-out blade takes shaving body cut. How are you fixed for blades?
You better look.
Just the blade we need.
Okay, and what have you found out?
Well, pretty much that you cannot. Well, for example, I've had one prototype made over in Hungary. After I went to about three or four companies in the United States and could not get it produced, that company, dealing with that government was really hard. The company that was manufacturing it folded, and I was stuck with returning a lot of people their money from the orders, because we never got our shipment in.
Yeah, and folks, this conversation is not about selling Vince's exercise machine. And it's not about anything like that. What it's about is what has happened to the ability of someone who makes an invention or invents something and gets a patent on it and then tries to manufacture it.
Yeah, one of the things that really blew my mind right off the beginning, in the late 80s, I was doing a lot of political and historical research, mostly on the Soviet Union, the armaments of the Soviet Union compared to the U.S. That was kind of big interest with me. I'm of Ukrainian descent. I'm half Ukrainian, and I was raised by grandparents that were very anti-socialist, anti-communist. So that was always a drive inside of me. And to do that sort of research. But when I started researching the export and import laws, it blew my mind, because if I would say I could manufacture this machine in the United States and I would export it, I would have to pay sometimes up to a 12 to 15% tax to export my exercise device. Now, if I make it in communist China, manufacture it there, I may only have to pay a 1.5% to 3% import tax. So already off the bat, you're set up to lose. And the really sad thing was that I had developed distributorships and people that wanted to handle it in Norway and Germany. Then I found out, well, Germany, at that time, they protect their companies from imports hurting their businesses. So I would have to pay the 15% to my government to get it over there. Then my distributor in Germany would have to pay another, God knows what, 20% or something. So the price of the exercise machine would have been so high, I wouldn't have been able to sell anything anyways.
And we saw a good example of that this morning. We went over to a friend's house who lives out in a very rural area, and he just purchased, made a major purchase, a big tractor, and all of the equipment, everything that you could possibly attach to the tractor, a backhoe, a snowplow, a post-hole digger, a plow, a disker, a rake. I mean, he had everything in the world that you could possibly attach to a tractor. He purchased this tractor for about $25,000 less than he could purchase the equivalent tractor being sold by John Deere. And the reason I know this is my brother works for John Deere Tractors in Oklahoma and sells John Deere Tractors. And this tractor that the fellow that we visited this morning purchased was made entirely in communist China.
Yeah, and the interesting thing that he mentioned, the one thing that I looked at, because I've designed not only that one exercise machine, but about six others that are very viable and they do things that other ones don't do. So when I look at something, the way it's constructed, I noticed that the steel and the tubing and everything, the way it was constructed, was heavy gauge. And the one thing that he said to us was that the Chinese now are not copying what, say, John Deere's making today. They're copying designs that were made 20, 30, maybe 40 years ago when things were made of quality here in the U.S. So now they've taken their marketing and their development of a quality product to a higher level, higher than previously. So it's going to be almost impossible. It is pretty much to compete with anything like that.
Yeah, it was incredible looking at this machine, and it looked like some monstrous contraption from the past that just runs forever and could never fail. You couldn't bend it. I don't care what you did. You couldn't hurt this thing at all. And he pointed out that everything is right out in the open, and he can. There's nothing on it that he can't fix or repair himself. And you know, it's just a copy of the really well made machinery of yesteryear, maybe the 40s or the early 50s or maybe even the late 30s. These indestructible things that the only reason they failed back then is they didn't have the wonderful oils and lubricants that we have today. But even today, you can go out in rural areas and farms across this nation, and you'll see old Ford tractors that have been running for 50 years and are still going to be running 50 years from now. And that's the kind of manufacturing that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's just very high quality. It's a shame when you see things like that. Well, anyone that's studied economics over the years that didn't go to college and studied economics, but kind of took it up like I did as for personal reasons, because I wanted to know what was going on, you see that after the jobs were exported, I was from Youngstown, Ohio. Youngstown, Ohio was the second largest steel producer in the country, only second to Pittsburgh. And I remember as a little boy, my grandparents lived across the street from United States Steel, and I would sit up on a hill and watch the workers go to work, and I'd watch the sparks fly and all the other stuff that goes on in an industrial plant. And it was an extremely large facility. But you look at, and I remember when I was growing up, people saying when the different global factions were investing money over in Japan, everyone said, well, who's going to buy Japanese steel? No one's going to buy that. We have the best steel in the nation here. Well, when you start looking and see how the unions were subverted, how the import-export laws were changed, and how the steel industry was built up overseas to pump steel into this country, then American jobs are lost. You can't afford to buy the things that you used to buy. Now you see why, in the state that we're in, economically from an employment standpoint, why Americans are forced to buy these cheaper products in China and can't afford to buy the United States manufactured ones.
Two day jets, the foaming tanker, clean pots and pans, just like a whip.
Ajax cuts grease faster than any other leading cleanser.
Use the pain, the elbow tax, when you start cleaning with Ajax.
Ajax really polishes as it cleans.
So use Ajax, the foaming cleanser.
My gosh, they're right. Foaming action Ajax makes even the dirtiest hand shine like new in a jiffy.
So use Ajax.
So what is the well, there really isn't any answer to this right now, is there?
No, not at all. I don't see it getting any better. From my standpoint, I have something that could have employed many people as far as a product wise. Could have been, I probably have over $100,000 into this project. It's taken many years. It wouldn't be like if I invented some type of widget that no one really wanted. It's really hard on someone that's an inventor or gets into business when you really have something that people do want. And then you're stuck, and it's your own country that kind of put the screws to you, and you can't get it made.
And it goes deeper than that. When you can get it made, you can't get it made to the quality that you can get it made somewhere else, or that someone else from another country is already selling.
Right.
And it's not that Americans don't want to do it. It's that the facilities no longer exist. They're just not there. And the expertise is gone.
Yeah. And I've worked with machine shops over the years, making various prototypes and going in there every year, see how things are going, or meet with someone, and you see they shut this line down, they're losing jobs, they're always talking, and this is just in the Youngstown area, and there are some big plants in Youngstown to do machine work, and this is just, and they make stuff for companies all over this nation, and they're talking about, boy, you know, we lost this competitor's going to China, this one went to Mexico, this one is going to South America, has some deal, and they're losing left and right, and it's killing the economic fabric of this country.
And the real key to it is that these companies can get something made better and cheaper for the company in a foreign country using cheap labor and the cheaper raw materials than they can in this country. And our government has facilitated this by not protecting American manufacturing and our products. They have made it easier for someone in a foreign country to sell their products in our country than for us to make and sell our own products in our own country.
Right. And it's just like if you look at televisions or, say, blenders. You know, blenders, I remember Hamilton Beach blender that was pretty much made in the U.S. or I don't know if it's a Quasar or something like that. Say 20, 22, 23 years ago, a product like a blender, for example, may cost $50, $55. And you bought one blender.
The USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a day to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
Traveling east, traveling west, wherever you go, Chevy service is best. Southward or north, near place or far, there's a Chevrolet dealer for your Chevrolet car.
So make a date today to see the USA and be here in your Chevrolet.
Well, that was a goof, folks. That wasn't supposed to play just then. I was queuing it up while he was talking about the decline in manufacturing, and then I was going to, you know,
and relating it to the blender manufacturing in the country.
and the machine decided to just play by itself, so it did.
Yeah, so what I was saying was basically is, like, for example, a product like a blender may have cost $55, but you had bought one blender and the thing lasted forever, you know, and it was made in America, and even though in relation to how much money you made back then, yeah, that was kind of a bigger purchase back 20, 22 years ago. But people were employed. Now you can go and buy a blender from China for like $12. I mean, we've been brought down to the point where through the Internal Revenue Service, through various illegal state taxes, local taxes, and so forth, and the decline of manufacturing in this country, and that there aren't any real jobs left, the decline of the American dollar, all these factors have caused us, we're dependent on this cheap, we're dependent on China because we can't afford anything else. And it's a shame. It's a shame because it hurts our American inventors. People think inventors get a lot of money. They really don't. A lot of times you hook up with a company, you're lucky to get 3 or 4% unless you bankroll the whole project yourself. And on top of it, for inventors to go ahead and, you know, mortgage their house, sell things just to get their product off the ground, get the legal, and forget this 1-800 patent a product stuff. That just doesn't work for $20 patent a product. You'll get eaten up in the marketplace. If I would have done that, my machine would be in Sears and in every other country company in the United States for sale because the Chinese would have copied it. The only thing that's kind of protecting me to an extent is that, you know, I went through the patent process properly with a good experienced patent attorney, and that costs like $10,000, you know, and the government didn't help me at all.
And now they have legislation introduced in Congress to get rid of your ability to hold your patents. They want to make patents available to anybody else in any other country, the inventions by Americans, so that they can just steal all of our intellectual property.
Yeah, if you don't understand how the patent process works, once you go ahead through a patent search, an attorney usually does this for you. What this does is it searches all the other patents to make sure there isn't one that's similar to yours. If that is a fact, then a patent attorney will say, well, we can go ahead and try to write a patent, and the process will continue. Now, during the time that he's petitioning with the Department of Patents, in Washington, D.C., and trying to get you a patent number, you are patent pending. It kind of means you sort of have protection, mostly in the U.S. You have patent against other companies in the U.S. copying your product and trying to repatent it. But this new legislation wants to say, well, when you're still in a patent process and you're not even solid with a patent number and you haven't even dreamed of applying for patents in other countries, we're going to go ahead and let the, say, Japanese engineers, which the Japanese knew about this legislation and already set up an office, an engineering office in Japan to study our patents from inventors that are poor, broke, and trying to make a buck and trying to help out America. And what they're going to do is they're going to examine the first initial...
Oh, you're too kind. What they're going to do is steal our patents.
Exactly
what they're going to do. And they're going to manufacture these things, and they're going to put our people out of business, our inventors out of business, the whole up and down the chain. But there's an agenda to this. And the agenda is to destroy the middle class in America and level the playing field and redistribute the wealth of the world from the United States and the other wealthy nations to the third world countries and bring down the standard of living in the United States and other countries who have enjoyed a high standard of living and bring up to meet somewhere between the two the standard of living of the poorer folks in the third world nations. And that's what socialism and communism is all about, ladies and gentlemen. And that's really what's at the heart and soul of this problem that we're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm only one of probably, I mean, tens of thousands at least of people. Just, I mean, I'm just talking about the one part of my life that I worked and try to get one of my inventions marketed and on the market. And I did my work. I like I said, I was endorsed by everybody that's anybody in karate. Endorsed my exercise machine as being one of the most advanced devices ever developed for stretching the lower limbs. And I did my part. And my country is not backing me at all. This is a true. This I am what Rush Limbaugh does not want to talk about. When he pushed for GATT and he pushed for NAFTA, he didn't talk about guys like me that got hurt. And he's a phony as far as I'm concerned.
Well, now, here on the EIB network, I've got to break in here, folks. We don't want to listen to this man because he's just not telling it the way it really is.
Boy, that was pretty realistic there, Bill. When he's shuffling his toilet paper or whatever he's doing.
Well, I've had a lot of practice. Allison taught me. She does the best imitation of Rush Limbaugh in the whole world.
Yeah, I guess many 2-year-olds across the country can do a good. We're going to do this. We're not going to do anything because I'm part of Real America, just as other inventors. And I'm telling you a real life story, real life, very documentable story. Did I say that right? Documentable. Thank you.
I think.
Thank you. Must have been the ice water. Tied my lips together.
Well, I'll make you feel better. I think.
You think. But, yeah, I'd like to hear from somebody. If someone wanted to call in, ask me a question on anything from the deputy stuff when I was involved as a deputy sheriff.
Yeah, by the way, he's a very modest fellow and doesn't like to have a lot of spotlight put on him. But everything I said about him at the beginning of this broadcast was true. Vince was with me. At some of the meetings in Kansas City, when we were working to bring a coalition of third parties to try to put a constitutional president or a president who would support the Constitution in the White House, and a lot of other things. And he's been involved in law enforcement and many, many, many other things. So if you'd like to call in and talk to Vince, the number is 520-333-4578. And we'll open the phone right now. And remember, this is a speakerphone here placed in front of the microphone. So when you call, make sure you have your mouth in front of your telephone microphone or whatever you call that. And sort of speak loudly, please. 520-333-4578 is the number. And we'll be taking calls until the end of this broadcast if anybody wants to call and talk. And if they don't, then Vince and I
will talk.
And we've been doing a lot of talking.
We could talk for hours and hours.
A couple of days. And have been. By the way, he's also a chef extraordinaire. I wasn't joking when I said that. He made dinner last night from scratch. And I mean from scratch, the old-fashioned way. you know, he made pasta. When I say he made pasta, I mean he made the pasta noodles. He made the pasta sauce. He made the pasta sausage. He made the everything and all from fresh, fantastic ingredients. And it was just absolutely incredible.
Another public service announcement from Brill Cream. Men, beware. Use one dab of Brill Cream. Just a little dab makes your hair look excitingly clean, disturbingly healthy. This man dared to use two dabs. Now he's in trouble. We refuse to be responsible.
Brill Cream!
Brill Cream!
Brill Cream! Brill Cream, a little dapple do ya. Brill Cream, you look so debonair. Brill Cream, the gals will offer to ya. They'll love to get their fingers in your hair. Brill Cream, a little dapple do ya. Or watch out, the gals will offer to ya.
Get Brill Cream today.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello. Can you talk a little louder, please?
Yeah. This is Jim from Prescott, Arizona.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. With the manufacturing base leaving this country like a dying ship, it's got to be planned to destroy the country because we're going to meet the curve pretty soon to where people don't have the money. We used to be the biggest market in the world. I guess we still are. I'm not sure. But we're going to reach a point to where nobody's got any money to buy anything.
Well, that is the point. They want to eliminate the middle class in this country and bring our standard of living down drastically and bring the standard of living of the real super poor in the third world nations up, and somewhere we're going to meet and the playing field will be level. What they have planned for the United States is that we become a service economy, sort of like the playground for the rest of the world, and we'll be selling the hot dogs and running the roller coasters and all that kind of stuff. Vince?
Yeah.
Disneyland of the world, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's exactly happening. And I was just up in Prescott. It's a nice area. I went up there.
Well, about the only jobs that are going to make it, because I can't think of anything you can manufacture in this country anymore. The service industry, building homes, repairing homes, or doctors, lawyers, police officers.
Well, that's exactly, that's what I said. This is going to be the service industry, the service nation to the world. And everybody's going to come here for hot dogs and hamburgers and rides and beautiful homes and things like that. And this population is going to provide the services that make all that stuff work.
Country,
you'll last like a third world country has always lasted.
Yeah.
Government to government, huh?
That's right.
All right, I'll let another caller get in there, Bill.
Okay, thank you. 520-333-4578. You see, that's the average attitude of the average man. He didn't understand what we were talking about, really. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
He is still thinking that if he doesn't have all this money, that everything is going to come to an end. But it's not. He's just going to be poor.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're gonna be here. It's not going to end for you. It's not going to be a mutual assured destruction.
That's right. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I received the notice about the book Oklahoma City Day One.
Yes.
Instead of my regular book.
Yes.
Which I ordered. Yes. I'd like to get
hold it. Call 520-333-4578. We're doing a radio broadcast here, folks. Okay? Call 520-333-4578 when we're not on the air. Okay? Or you can send the letter that was sent to you back and just tell us what you want. In place of the order that you ordered, we'll either give you a refund or we'll give you a choice of the books that were on that letter, whichever one. But don't call a radio show about that kind of stuff, please. It doesn't belong here. 520-333-4578 is the number. Did you want to talk about the what I started there, the attitude of most people toward that? They really don't understand what's happening, and they think if they can't buy a $150,000 home and get paid $50,000 or $75,000 a year, that the world's going to come to an end?
Yeah, it's and on the other hand, too, as long as some of the people are able to get their $75,000 a year payment or for whatever labor they do and also buy that house, they don't even care about any of the stuff that I just talked about. You know what they'll say to me? They'll say, oh, well, that's really bad. Boy, maybe you should write some letters. Well, no, not me.
Not me. You, too. And your husband and your wife and your kids and everyone else. You have to get off your rear ends and quit watching TV and worrying about your own rear.
Yeah, basically. That's right. And then that's basically what everybody's worried about.
Yeah, because your kids, maybe if I lived in your town and things were working out good for me, maybe your kids could have came and worked for me packing boxes in high school and then moved up to an executive position one day. But that's not going to happen because I don't exist. And what if your job goes bad and you really need your kids out there working? You think they're going to be able to make payments on your $175,000 home? He's sending your three kids out to McDonald's to work. It's not going to work.
Or even your $50,000 home. This is, right. You see, what Americans don't understand, they think if they don't pay attention to what's happening here, that the New World Order will come and everything's going to be copacetic, and as long as they don't say or do anything that's politically incorrect or you know, get out here with us and try to hang on to what we have and to make sure that the future's bright and good, that everything's going to be okay for them. And I get news for you. That's not what's planned. Socialism will not allow any of you listening to this broadcast ever to live at the standard of living that you're living now. And it's all got to come crashing down. That's the plan. It's called a redistribution of wealth. And socialists are in power in this country, and they're bringing about the New World Order. And by God, you've got to get some kind of a grasp of understanding of all of this, and you've got to become active, and you've got to help us head this off. And don't misunderstand me. We're not going to ever go back to the way anything ever was. That's not the nature of change. And once change occurs, the outcome is never really certain. But you can at least get involved and make sure that the outcome is something that's good instead of something that's going to be very destructive for all of us.
And just as Bill has said, you know, socialism robs the spirit. If I was in a socialist, diehard, so if I was in a Soviet Union, which is still, as far as I'm concerned, the Soviet Union, or any third world country, and I came up with an invention, in most cases, that invention gets confiscated. The most credit I'll get is maybe my name will be listed on some government document somewhere, but you don't get any royalties. And what happens is, that's where progress goes to the Middle Ages, because the only thing that really gets people motivated for things is number one, a love for what they're doing, a desire to create something new, and I'm saying this from an inventor standpoint. But also, it's nice to get a monetary reward for your work, and that is work. People that are inventors that you say don't have a job, they don't get a paycheck, they do work. They do work. They're working every day. They're just not getting paid for it. And their payment comes different than yours. Yours comes once a week or twice a month. Theirs comes at the end of all the work and effort they put into it. And inventors are pretty much finished in this country, as far as what I see.
Yeah, inventors, manufacturers. When I said that this is going to be the service industry to the world, you can look around and you can see it happening. And if you understand what's going on, you're going to see that this is going to be the playground for the people that are going to be traveling and vacationing and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and wait till the banks foreclose on your house, because I don't know if you realize, but anybody that signs any kind of mortgage with any bank, there's a clause in there that the bank can at any time call in the note, and if they call in the note, your house is going to wind up in a catalog in Japan.
Yeah.
And someone that is involved in all this worldwide economic socialism. See, the socialism isn't for them. The socialism is for everybody else. They're not going to be socialists. They want everyone else to live under socialism. They're going to be the rich. They're not going to be poor. And that's where your property is going to wind up.
It's like the if you looked at the Soviet Union, you saw that they were practicing what they called communism. And communism is supposed to be where everybody is on the same level, and you contribute according to your abilities and you receive according to your needs, but nobody is supposed to be rich or wealthy or at a level elite above the rest of the population. But that's not how it works in practice. There was an elite, there was a Politburo, there was a tremendous number of leaders and regional directors and factory heads and people like that who had cars who had bigger and better homes, who had vacation homes, which they called dakas at the lakes and rural super vacation areas of the Supreme Soviet, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. the same way it's going to be in the New World Order. You see, socialism and communism is really a method of controlling populations. The economics of it never has, never can, and never will work. And that's been demonstrated amply all over the world. For instance, if everybody's on the dole, who's going to produce the wealth that's going to enable Big Brother the state to hand out this big dole? I mean, nobody ever thinks of that. And why should some of the population work tremendously harder than another portion of the population, which does little or nothing but gets the same benefit of that tremendous amount of work done by those few? I don't think anybody has ever adequately explained that to me. In fact, I know they haven't. And if you think you can, I'm here, and you can write me a letter or give me a call, because I'd be interested in hearing your explanation. Somebody called a few minutes ago, and I think I accidentally hung up on them. The number is 520-333-4578. Excuse me. It's 520-333-4578. If you want to jump in on this conversation, you're certainly welcome to do so.
Yeah, there was the one remark that the caller before made. He said that the United States was one of the biggest, or he thought it, that we still are, one of the biggest buyers of products. And I don't know if I've really seen that reflected, and I'll tell you where. At one time, I did have a shortwave talk show on the air about 3 years ago, and I sold shortwave radios. We sold a really nice digital shortwave radio. It's probably there's never been one offered anywhere for the price that we sold it at, and did pretty well. But then there was a point where, for some reason, my shipment got cut off. I was buying them through an importer that was importing them for me. But when I did meet with the Chinese, and that's where the radio came from, and don't think that you have anything electronic in your house that's American-made, because it's not true. I was at the Electronics Expo, the International Electronics Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I met with the Chinese manufacturers. And they, in a sense, said they didn't care how many orders I had for my radios. They didn't care that I would like to have them for Christmas for my customers, because they're very busy with the European and South American countries. Those countries are definitely further along than where we're at, and they are extremely way more dependent on China than we are, and they buy a lot of their stuff. So they were really interested with those people. They really didn't. They even said, well, the United States isn't our biggest market. I couldn't believe it, and they meant it, because I was at a business meeting. This wasn't something, a couple guys talking over a beer. This was a business meeting. And these were owners or directors of the plants over in China. So don't think that we're the biggest buyer.
Yeah. And there's, folks, there's only one shortwave radio made in America. And I'm not sure that all the parts are made in America, but the radio itself is made in America, and that's Drake.
Right.
And there isn't any other shortwave radio, or maybe even radio of any kind, that's made in the United States of America.
Right. Even the radios, some people have said, well, I'm going to buy a radio because it's made in Korea or it's made in Japan. I don't want to buy anything with communist labor. You have to realize this. They sub out a lot of their electronic board work to China, mainland China. Then it goes back, and then it may be, I guess, final assembly done in Korea or done in Taiwan, or final assemblies done in Japan. But A lot of the sweat and labor is done in China on these products.
Yeah, just about anything that's manufactured today either is manufactured in one of these third world nations where the labor and the materials are dirt cheap compared to anything that you could get them for in this country, or get labor for in this country, or portions of them are manufactured in these countries, or maybe several different countries, and then shipped to the country of final assembly. And they just passed, or they just introduced in Congress legislation, ladies and gentlemen, saying that manufacturers can claim that their product is made in the United States of America, regardless of where all of the parts are manufactured, if it's assembled here.
Yeah.
So all of the parts inside of a car, of a CD player, of a refrigerator, could be made in 50 different countries. All of those parts shipped here, and then they have them assembled somewhere in a plant in the United States. They are going to be, if this passes, they're going to be allowed by law to put made in America or made in the United States on that product. And it's just a lie. It's just a lie.
Okay, I'll give you an example. As I said before, I had one of my prototypes manufactured over in Hungary, and we put an order in with the Hungarians for these exercise machines. Well, the company that was doing the in-between work between me and Hungary did government contract work. They worked with a government organization called GSA, government, I think it's GSA, I believe. It's the government agency that manufacturers can go to, get blueprints, and make bids on whatever jobs the government needs to have made. Well, they got the bid on the United States Air Force survival knife, okay? The whole knife, everything, at that time, this was around 1990, 1991, the whole knife was made in Hungary. The only thing that I think was, there was a couple screws and some other things that were United States, but I remember the owner of this place, this company, telling me, he says, all we got to do is have it put together. So they set up an area where they had bins with all the parts to this knife. And it was a high-quality knife. It was, like I said, a survival-type knife for the Air Force. And they just assembled them. And he told me, he says, as long as I, you know, we put it together here, then we could put Made in USA. And that was back in 91. So there may have been maybe one part, but I know the blade, the overwhelming majority of the parts were made in Hungary because I was there when they brought the packages in.
Well, it doesn't look like we're going to get any calls, and that upsets me.
You can talk about anything. We don't have to talk about patents.
We're going to take this little break. We're going to come back. Right. Then we'll do some chit-chat till the end of this broadcast, and then we'll do it. Because if this continues to occur, then I'll put the hour of the time, 1 hour on Friday or Saturday or Sunday nights, and just forget about the rest of this stuff.
I always thought you had a beard like seaweed, long and wet. Not since I got acquainted with these blue blades by Gillette. I've outlawed whiskers in my court. Behold, my crew shaves slick. No other blade can whisk them off, so exit smooth and quick. Who looks sharp every time you gaze? Who feels sharp and the arm the ball? Just be sharp, use your left blue blade for the quickest, slickest shave. Ta-ha!
Just got about another minute, and we're going to have to hang it up and say goodbye. So what words of wisdom do you have for our listening audience out there, man?
Oh, boy. Well, the same thing I've been telling people for years, which is to start getting active, start finding out what's going on, get away from your television sets, start spending time with your family, and that's really about it. But you know, our backs are against the wall. You know, guys like Bill and I and a lot of the other people that have been fighting this battle in different areas, some in business, some in the gun issue, and so sometimes we dip in a little bit of all of them. We can't do everything. I mean, this radio broadcast, I've had a broadcast before. I know what it entails. Bill has a newspaper, a broadcast, a research center, and publishing books. And you know, you gotta call. You not only have to support him and his broadcast, but you're going to have to start doing something because there's not much time left. If things continue the way they are, I don't see them getting any better at all. And you're going to have to participate if you want to have anything left in this country to enjoy, because you're not going to like it when, you know, you might have your beer and your football on TV right now, and that's all you're doing, and you're happy. But what happens when that's all you're allowed to do, or that's all you can do, is have your beer, football, TV, and that's it, and you have no other hope of doing anything else, and that's where it's going.
Yeah, your request to travel outside of your local area has been disapproved. The National Park Service has just recently introduced the proposal for a regulation that says before you can visit any national park in the nation, you have to have a reservation. And right now, the reservations lists are sometimes a year to 2 years in advance. So you put that in your pipe and smoke it. Good night, folks. Thank you, Vince, for being the guest today.
Oh, thank you very much, Bill. I loved it.
And God bless you all.
The following presentation is brought to you by TV Tune, the proud makers of television's greatest hits. And now a word from our sponsors.
Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, clap, clap, but snap, make the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies. I say a crackle, a crispy sound. You gotta have crackle or the clock's not wound. Geek, cackle, feather, tickle, belt, buckle, beef, pickle, but the crackle makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies. I insist that pop's the sound. The best is missed unless pop's around. You can't stop popping when the stereo's popping. Pop makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies. Kellogg's best to you.
Hello, amigo. I'm Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say bananas have to ripen in a certain way. And when they're flecked with brown and have a golden hue, bananas taste the best and are the best for you. You can put them in a salad, you can put them in a pie, any way you want to eat them. It's impossible to beat them, but bananas like the climate of the very, very tropical equator. So you should never put bananas in the refrigerator.
To have bananas that are fully ripe, you must be absolutely sure to take them home and let them ripen. And let them stretch out.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Thank you. listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Having a hard time finding your favorite show on shortwave or satellite? The Christian Media Newspaper now provides program guides to all the top Christian, patriot, and alternative radio programs. Four times a year, they print an updated shortwave and satellite program guide. Christian Media is only $20 a year and includes news and interviews on Christian books, video, music, and broadcasting. Subscribe now and receive a free Christian music compact disc with your paid order. To subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. Once again, to subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Call now.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, all oldies most of the time.
When a star is born, it possesses a gift or two. And one of them is this, it has the power to make a wish come true. When you wish upon a star, make no difference.